you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Hello, my name is Danny Roth, and this is Everyday Horror. It's a podcast where we watch at least one horror movie for every day in the month of October. And then we talk about it in a scary way, but not really. Today, I am joined by the writer and video editor at IO9, Beth Elderkin, who is also the co-host of a podcast. It's the Charming podcast, which is for the Charmed reboot. Tripped right over my words, but they'll get it. How you doing, Beth?
Blessed be. Thanks for having me.
Wow. All right. Just like all in. So.
Oh, I'm dedicated to what we're talking about today.
Okay. Well, what are we talking about? I won't even waste any time then.
All right. Sounds good. We are talking about the beloved cult and beautiful 1990s teen classic, The Craft.
So I'm really glad that you picked The Craft because, A, it was an excuse to rewatch it. This is definitely one of my favorite movies when I was in high school. And also, if you go back, if you're listening to this podcast and you've been listening before, or this is the first one you're checking out, you'll notice that a lot of the podcasts have been about films that have, you know, they're relevant. They're relevant to the times we're living in a way that's super depressing. And, you know, I find The Craft to be like it's a horror movie, but gosh, it's upbeat. I feel really like I watch it and I feel happy. That movie makes me happy. And I can't say that about like a lot of these other ones. I'm like, I like these movies, but gosh, in 2018, they're just so goddamn depressing. And I don't feel that way watching The Craft. So first of all, thank you for picking it.
Absolutely. I mean, there's nothing quite like, you know, having a game of Lies of Feathers, stiff as a board, getting a bunch of magic, turning on your best friends, you know, almost being driven to suicide, and then discovering you have special powers and are the only one who gets to have them forever.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. So do you remember when you first watched it? Did you watch it when it came out? What was your situation?
Unfortunately, I wouldn't have been that lucky because I grew up in a Christian household that was a little bit more conservative, at least California coastal conservative. So I didn't really get to watch movies like this, especially not a rated R movie about witchcraft. That was a no-no. But I do remember I went to one of my best friend's houses for a sleepover, as you do. And it's just me and her, we're chilling in her room. And she's like, I've got The Craft. Do you want to watch it? And I'm like, oh my God, can we actually do that? Because that sounds amazing. This was a form of rebellion I had never known. This was listening to TLC's Crazy Sexy Cool when my parents wouldn't allow me to listen to secular music. This was that level of amazing. And it was terrifying. There were some things that still haunt me to this day. The whole suicide plot line was not ideal, but it was a very memorable moment in Teen Beth's growing up.
That's really interesting. I'm trying to remember when I first saw it. I mean, I think I probably saw it somewhere within the I saw it once it was on TV, so my guess would be probably somewhere in 97 or 98. But yeah, it would have been for me because I'm pretty old. I was in high school at that time, mm-hmm. and yeah, it was definitely in my mind inexorably tied to a lot of other movies. But I would say the two obvious ones, and gosh, I guess one of them might come up again at the end of this podcast, but one of them is Scream, and then the other one is Empire Records, because Robin Tunney is in both this and Empire Records, and in fact, the reason that she has a wig, I don't know if you've ever seen this movie, but one of the things that people really remember about it is that Robin Tunney has a real bad wig. Maybe some people don't think it's that bad, but it's pretty bad. But she has it because she shaved her head right before this, when she filmed Empire Records. So Empire Records sort of secretly and said kind of subconsciously is a part of this movie. You just don't know it unless you know that fact. And Scream, because Neve Campbell and Skeet Ulrich are also in both films. So, yeah, I mean, like, it definitely keys right into that perfect 90s nostalgia for me. It was definitely during that time where I was trying to figure myself out in a space where, you know, I mean, the 90s, bless that decade. It tried really hard. But, like, if you were, you know, dealing with any kind of burgeoning non-heterosexual attractions at all, it was definitely not ideal, especially if you were male presenting. Not really the best decade for that. I guess better than the 80s, but just barely. So yeah, it was definitely a movie where I watched and I was like, why do I identify so much with these girls? And I was definitely sorting through some stuff, and rewatching it now, I feel exactly the same way, which is that they're all relatable and very different ways. Like, is there a character, like, when you watch The Craft, when you first watched it versus when you watch it now, like, do you have like a Sex and the City thing where you're like, I'm this one?
I guess I would probably be Neve Campbell's character, although Bonnie, for some reason I was forgetting her name because I just mostly see her as Neve Campbell, because I was very shy. I had insecurities about my body when I was younger, even though, you know, arguably way thinner than I am now. So it's like, well, you just got to learn to let those kind of things go. So yeah, so I really identified with Nancy's struggles. And, you know, I am a Scorpio, so I could totally see myself, just once I got everything I wanted, just turning flat out evil and betraying all of my ideals.
Yeah, I mean, like, I also, Bonnie is, I think, the most obviously relatable person for anybody that is dealing with any kind of discomfort in their own skin, any kind of dysmorphia or anything that even approaches that. I think she's the most obvious one. But, like, yeah, dude, I don't know. I watched it and, like, I like Robin Tunney. Sarah's a fine character. I understand empirically that Nancy is evil, but I wanted to be Fariza Balk. But I'm like, that's just a woman that I always, like, anything that she was in, I was like, can I just be her?
I think that's a pretty general response.
Yeah, like, maybe this is very obvious, but, you know, like, maybe if you were born in a different time, you wouldn't know. But yeah, Fariza Balk is just a very aspirational figure. There's just something about her that makes you really, really, really want to be her. She's just so badass. I don't actually know any other way to put it. She just seems really confident. Her style is always on point. This is an example of where you kind of want to be the bad one. You know, you just kind of want to be bad. But I feel like I'm sort of putting the cart before the horse. What is the pitch? What is The Craft? I've been listening. The theme song for Charmed is in The Craft. In fact, how often does that song, that's a completely different conversation, but that song is like an every witch thing at this point. What is sort of the pitch of The Craft?
Well, I mean, The Craft was really in development for many years because these couple producers wanted to make a story about teen girl witches. And it was in development hell for a long time because, you know, in the 90s, before Clueless, before Babysitter's Club, and before marketers and Hollywood realized women spend money on things that they like, there was this idea that you couldn't have an audience for a story like this about teenage girls who delve into witchcraft, not realizing there was a big demographic, as you and I can directly state, because we related to it so much. So it's basically about this girl who, you know, Robin's character, she moves into LA after being in San Francisco. She has some psychological issues and she makes friends with these three teenage witches. You know, at first she's kind of put off by them because Nancy is not the, you know, the nicest person, but God damn it, she is so cool. But she, you know, they call the corners. This is their circle, north, south, east, and west. They can make things happen, which involves, you know, killing a person and getting power. Kind of just goes hand in hand.
simply put, it's a movie for anybody who feels like an outsider, which is basically everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's not a lot of people that are, you know, not going to get something out of The Craft. It does. It is funny that anyone would think. But I guess this sort of carries forward to, you know, it's like the same mentality that says we don't want to make action figures that are girls, because girls don't buy action figures and boys won't buy action figures of girls. It's sort of like this same weird, completely incorrect mentality, just leaving lots of money on the table mentality that, A, women are not going to go watch a movie, and B, that no man could watch this film and get something out of it. Like, kind of a ridiculous assertion, but it was true in the 90s. It's still true now. I mean, people are kind of learning, but yeah, I just find this film to be like, I've never encountered a person that is like, man, I hate that Craft movie. So unrelatable. Everybody watches that movie and goes like, man, I felt really on the outside when I was in high school, and I definitely had my little weird clique of friends, and we felt out of step, but at least we had each other, and sometimes there was drama that came from the fact that we all were so in the fog of feeling out of step with the world. But, you know, we did our best to stay together. Like, it's just like, it really is such a, you know, it's just, all you have to do is add witchcraft. That's it.
Yeah, I mean, in the 80s, the whole idea of being a misfit or out of place was being quirky. But in the 90s, I mean, there was more recognition that being out of place meant a whole lot more than that, and it was a lot more diverse. It could mean, you know, mental health issues. It could mean, you know, you're practicing things that other people don't agree with. It could be your LGBT. In the case of Rochelle, it could be because one person is openly racist to her. And so I do want to mention about Rochelle, because I was doing a little research about this. So the role was actually originally written for a white actress, and then they rewrote it once Rachel True came on board. But in the original version, the character had bulimia. So she had body dysmorphia, and that was her damage. And you can kind of see reflections of it. I understand why they wanted to change it, because they wanted to deal with that racism component. You know, they wanted to try and have that conversation, but they did it so badly that they ignored what could have actually been an interesting character experience for her to address.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think they get it perfect, certainly, but the truth of it is that I just think there's so few movies that openly acknowledged that within a friend group. Like, the fact that they actually bothered, you know, like, if I have to put my hand on my heart, like, I know that, like, bulimia is not a thing that's covered necessarily either, but Bonnie is dealing with specifically with body issues, and I mean, I would honestly, if I could put a hand on heart, what I would say is it probably would have been better if they had put that maybe more on her, that she was dealing with the thing that she couldn't fix with her body in all manner of different ways, because that would have made a lot of sense to me, and then kept Rochelle dealing with racism and maybe write that a little bit better. I just think I'm really glad, and I'm rewatching it in 2018. It's like, yeah, it's a little clunky. Yes, the 90s version of Marsha Brady is really like this very pat mustache twirling racist villain. But you know, honestly, where I went to school was mostly white kids, and gosh, if you were black, it really sucked, and people were not subtle about it. So, you know, I ultimately would say that I'm glad that it was in there. And yeah, and rewatching it now, like, clunky though it is, I'm like, yeah, I think this is good, and I think it's good that that Nancy's deal is that she's broke, that she's impoverished and living mm-hmm. in a place where most other people have got money. That's actually like the one thing I definitely found myself relating to in a way that I don't think I had maybe consciously sort of caught on to when I was a kid, because I was surrounded. I grew up in a town which we lived in like the tiniest house in an upper middle class town, and our upper middle class town was right next to the wealthiest town in Bergen County, New Jersey, which is a place called Alpine, and it's just mansion land. And both the towns are ultimately relatively small, so all of the intramural sports were combined. So, like, I was, you know, my parents were spending all of their money making it so that I could, you know, be a part of this world, throwing themselves into debt. But everybody else that was around me, they were all millionaires. I was surrounded by, like, the elite, and it did not really go well for me. I wasn't, you know, I wasn't really included. It wasn't a great thing. And so I can certainly understand, like, that rage that Nancy feels, the reason why she's, you know, so quick to embrace the idea of a five-finger discount, the reason that she's so aggressive, I assume now as an adult, is, yeah, she's got a huge chip on her shoulder because she's a poor girl surrounded by people who have money. I mean, even Robin Tunney's character, Sarah, when she moves into a new house, like, yeah, it's got, like, water dripping down, but the house is big. They're living in a really big house, so they must be doing okay. And meanwhile, Nancy is in, like, a trailer with her mother and her mother's abusive, psychologically, physically, and it kind of suggests sexually, like, he's, like, a kind of, like, not really a stepdad, just a boyfriend. So, yeah, I mean, like, I find that to be, again, on recent viewing, something that actually works really well. In fact, in a way, that might be the thing that works best for me. I didn't realize how much I was going to like it until. So the plot of the movie is, like, yeah, they don't have any magic powers. Robin Tunney shows up, they get magic powers, and one of the things that happens that goes their way is that this shitty boyfriend dies of a heart attack. And, like, the mom sort of puts on a sad face until they find out that they're getting a bunch of money. And then they have a big celebration. And I thought, wow, this is such a good moment. In 2018, this feels really sweet. And you're just like, man, this is great. Like, that really crappy, gross dude is dead. And that's good. Like, it's just a really, like, it's such a funny moment. Like, watching it now, I'm like, oh, this is wonderful.
Yeah, I mean, it felt like he got what was coming to him, and that moment between him and Nancy was really intense because,
oh yeah,
it's you know, it's suggested, though not directly stated, that Nancy is causing him to have that heart attack. But even if she didn't cause it, she is letting it happen / helping it along, and she knows exactly what is happening to him, and she does not care. In fact, she's wanting it to happen.
What's the thing that jumps out at you? I started to word vomit. Like, what's some stuff about this movie that you really like?
Well, one of the things that really stood out to me when I was watching it, I just watched it yesterday, was how they balance the witchcraft part with the friendship part, which is something you don't really see in a lot of these kind of movies. It's like once they have that goal, once they have that thing they need to achieve, then they're just doing that. But for example, in the montage where you have Dangerous Type, which, by the way, can we just praise this soundtrack? Because it is gorgeous.
I literally had just brought it up. I went on IMDb and brought it up so that we could talk about it at any point that you're ready. But yes, absolutely, it is great.
This was one where they actually, like, released it a month after the movie came out because so many people wanted the music from the movie. They didn't plan it, but then they had such high demands that they released it. And I'm like, thank you very much. I would love to get, like, a 20th anniversary. Did they do a 20th anniversary, like, vinyl re-release? Because if not, maybe the 30th or 25th, or maybe just this year?
That is a very good question.
So during the montage, you see them practicing spells, but you also see them hanging out. They're watching movies together. They're going on walks. They're chilling in the quad. You know, they're not just witches, they're also friends, and they make that very clear. I mean, even in their slumber party where they're playing Light as a Feather, Stiff as a Board, the movie does a really good job at showing the friendship, the budding friendship that these girls have, which I really admired, because then when you start to see it break down, it feels extra heartbreaking because you know that they really care about each other.
Oh yeah, absolutely. It is. Yeah, it's really a friendship movie at its heart in a lot of ways. By the way, yes. I don't know who put it out. I couldn't find the company, but yeah, in 2015 there was a vinyl LP.
Yes.
It was just Sony Legacy. I'm kind of surprised by that. I would have thought that would have been like a Mondo or something would have done that. But yeah, it's out there. I think like the only critique I would have of that is that, you know, if it's out by a mainstream company like that, it probably means that it's just a standard record. Mm-hmm. I like when the LP is like see-through and it's got like a cool element to it, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm a real snob. So anyway, the fact of the matter is, yeah, like right before the 20th anniversary, they put it out, which is pretty cool. So yeah, if you wanted to get your Our Lady piece on with like some Sponge and Matthew Sweet and Space Hog and et cetera, it's available to you for the low, low price of $17.99 on Amazon, because I really want the extra mile. Maybe I'll just buy it. Maybe I will. Anyway, yeah, I totally agree that it's a friendship movie, that it's kind of interesting the way that Robin Tunney's character comes in and sort of fulfills something, not just on the witchy side of things, but the three of them on their own have kind of gotten, I don't know, kind of lost in the fog of life, and have just sort of been comfortable enough with being the three bad girls that everybody doesn't like, that they like, maybe they're witches and maybe they're not, and like just that stigma they've decided to embrace, but that's all they've got. And to have a new friend come in sort of opens them up to new possibilities. And I think that's very human, and that's very typical, that, you know, sometimes a new person coming into a friend group can really sometimes be very healthy and helpful. How do you feel about Skeet? What do you think about Skeet Ulrich in this movie?
I mean, he's now, you know, Jughead's dad on Riverdale, so I don't have a problem with him conceptually. In the movie, this part is just there to be there. It's there to serve a purpose, and it could be played by literally anyone. I don't feel Skeet Ulrich, I'm not even saying his name right, and I don't care. He doesn't bring anything necessarily special, and I feel like he's just kind of going through it. I don't know what you think.
I find the concept, again, like, I don't, you know, I watch it and I think, here's a guy not interested in a girl, then kind of interested, doesn't get his way, completely disinterested, then obsessed. It's a thing. Like, you don't need magic to make that happen. Like, this is a pretty standard, toxic high school guy behavior. He's not a likable character, but I find his behavior to be pretty realistic, even though there's magic involved. I don't think you really, like, you could have said, like, the magic was fake, and I still would have believed it. Again, talking about really satisfying moments, maybe the best Me Too moment by accident in a 90s film is Fariza Balk throwing him out the window. It's so good. It's so satisfying. Oh, he's sorry. He's sorry. And then out he goes. It's pretty good. I have to say, like, he dies in the, I think the film is supposed to make me go like, oh, a line has been crossed. And I'm like, no, that's good.
I mean, I'm in more of a, I guess I'd say a complicated neutral space when it comes to that. On one hand, there is that satisfaction of seeing a genuinely pretty awful person, you know, get what we see as his just desserts. But on the other hand, he was under a spell, so he was being influenced by things outside of his control. You know, essentially he's kind of being roofied by this love obsession drug, which if it were a man who had done it to a woman and she started behaving, you know, crazy, I think we would interpret it a different way. There's a little bit of a risk of a double standard. So I have a complicated feeling about this.
I get it. I guess I just, you know, like if I looked at it and said, well, we treat men and women equally, then I would be like, sure, but we don't. So,
true.
You know, I think for me, I just, yeah, I look at it. And for me, if it's anything, it's more that this is a moment wherein Nancy is doing something that Sarah doesn't want. Like, Sarah wants a conclusion to this problem, his behavior, you know, and like, yes, there's magic involved. However, you know, as a real world analog. There's plenty of women in this world that have found that they thought that they wanted a guy's affections and then they realized they didn't, and then he wouldn't take no for an answer. Like, this is a pretty, it's a pretty real life thing. Again, don't need magic for it to happen. And so, you know, I think that the complexity comes from the fact that, yes, Sarah wanted to find a conclusion to this, but Nancy's way of dealing with it is not something that Sarah wants.
Yeah.
And as a result, like, that is a betrayal of their friendship, and it's also showing a way that Nancy is, like, that's the she completely crossed the line moment. Like, everything else is not ideal. Like, basically, I mean, if you've never seen The Craft, the gist is no magical powers. Sarah shows up. They get the magical powers. They start to kind of get things that they want. But the thing that Nancy wants is to have the powers of a god, basically. There's this figure that they worship called Manu. And so she wants the powers of Manu, and she gets them, and she uses them to, you know, somewhat nefarious purpose, I suppose. You know, like, she runs red lights and stuff. And
I know, like, and so bad, right?
What a bad person with her red light running. That punk. Anyway, yeah. So, like, she does all these minor things, and like, and yeah, I don't think we're supposed to feel too bad about the stepdad figure dying, because he is, I mean, like, the implication is that he's probably sexually assaulted Fariza Balk's character, and certainly has assaulted her mother repeatedly. So, like, you're not supposed to feel a lot of sympathy for him. You are supposed to feel some complicated feelings about Skeet's character, if not because of the magic thing, then because he's younger. His greatest sin is that he said that Sarah had sex with him and she didn't, which is shitty. It's not a very good thing that he did, but it's not sexual assault. He didn't do that. So, like, yeah, it's you know, like, not to pull a Whoopi Goldberg. Like, I'm not trying to be like, it's not rape, but, like, there's no, like, you know what I mean? Like, there's no sexual assault at all. Like, he just lies and does a thing that harms her standing, I guess, and hurts her feelings, which is not good, but it's not assault. So, I guess, nuance? I don't know.
And I think that's okay for it to be in a nuanced place. And, you know, one of the things that really attracts me to The Craft and other shows and films that deal with witchcraft and magic is how it's used as a metaphor for things that we go with and go through in real life. That's the one real benefit that magic has as a metaphor. I mean, here you have it as a metaphor for toxic masculinity, for rape culture, and for, you know, sexual assault. I mean, he's driven through these, you know, through this influence to assault her. And, you know, the women also use it to gain power, to get what they want. I mean, these are metaphors for, you know, possibly, you know, making impulsive decisions and doing bad things in order to get what you want. And it's going to have consequences. In this case, it comes back times three.
Yes. Yes. That is the shtick, is that it comes back times three. So, hey, you picked this movie not just because you liked it, but also because witchcraft is kind of a big thing, and or was certainly in the 90s, and seems to be now again a thing that people have an interest in pop culture media.
Yeah, so I mean, as I mentioned, you know, it's a great tool for storytelling. It's monsters, fantasy, witchcraft, or magic are great ways to talk about things that we go with in real life. Buffy the Vampire Slayer was really good at that. The Monster of the Week had something to do with things that teenagers go through. Charmed did it in the early seasons, and now we have the reboot, which in the first episode, the Monster of the Week is just basically a giant Me Too metaphor, which, you know, works in the context of if you understand what's going on in Me Too and you feel what's happening there and you relate to it, especially on college campuses, that's a way to, you know, to frame it in a way that you can understand or look at from a different perspective. And on, you know, apart from the metaphor aspect, when you look at actual, you know, paganism, Wiccan, the witchcraft, the craft, I mean, it is a, you know, practicing religion for many people, and that's great. But there is also a penchant or an attraction for young women in particular when they're growing up. And I grew up, I had this myself, you know, teen girls, sometimes when they feel a little ostracized or out of power, they're attracted to the idea of witchcraft because they feel powerless. And it's a way to have some control over what you feel, what you're going through, the people around you, because young women often feel in a position of powerlessness. And that doesn't mean that, you know, they're practicing it in the same way as actual practicing pagans. It does, they're not, you know, the same thing. But from, you know, from the Salem witch trials all the way through today, young women have a drive to feel connected to something that can give them power they feel denied. And that's, to me, the appeal of things like the craft.
Witchcraft does take on a real interest. I remember because of the craft, I would see, I had friends that would check out other stuff, like even things that were supposed to be a little more mature. And by that, I don't mean like, you know, like a triple X rated thing, but just, you know, it's more about adults. But I remember being in high school and I dated a girl that really liked practical magic.
Oh,
practical
yes.
magic is not, that's not about high schoolers at all.
Nope.
That is about adults. That's like Sandra Bullock and Nicole Kidman before Nicole Kidman was like super, super huge, and like Stockard Channing, Diane Wiest, like Aidan Quinn. Like this is like a, you know what I mean? Like this is a romance movie for romancy adults. You know what I mean? Like this is like the craft by way of, I don't know, Accidental Tourist. It's, you know what I mean? It's like, it's much more a mature tale. And yet, I knew a lot of people that watched it and loved it because they just liked the witchcraft element to it. And I do think it's absolutely because it's that feeling of where can you draw power if not from where we're expected to, right? Because it's just not, we're not, if you build a civilization wherein, I don't know, like, yeah, like let's say like you grew up in America and you're part of our Western American take on Christianity, it's not really geared to benefit women, particularly. Not really built to help a woman out. But witchcraft has always kind of felt like weirdly, very like, not weirdly, but like, but very women centric. You know, like it. I don't think that people really viewed witchcraft as something that like was a thing for dudes until Harry Potter came along, and then all of a sudden it was about like wizards and stuff. Like weirdly, Harry Potter kind of changed the game. I feel like up until then, spells was like, you know, that was like a thing where guys would be like, that's for chicks, you know. And then Harry Potter came along, and then all of a sudden it was like, oh, that's for Brits. No, I'm kidding. It was for everybody. But yeah, like it's really interesting. Like every couple of minutes, I keep thinking about how that sort of became the modern incarnation. Like, yeah, he's a wizard, but like, it's the same shit. It's like friends, magic, teenagers. It's at like at the root of it, it's the same parts, and then like consequences of how we use the power that we have. It's just that, you know, there are boys in the party now. And so that makes it fundamentally different. But yeah, like that's sort of like when I think of the modern incarnation of popular witchcraft in culture and in media, Harry Potter is the first thing I think of.
It's kind of interesting because, I mean, that's arguably like a family franchise. But when the craft first came out, it was rated R specifically, like when they turned in the script before they started shooting, the MPAA were like, we're rating this R because it's teen girls practicing witchcraft and you can't change our minds. So they were originally gunning for a PG-13. They weren't going to have, you know, the suicide scene, which still bothers me. They weren't going to have those moments, or at least they were going to more allude to them, but then they had the freedom to, because boom, the MPAA was like, you got to have a hard R. And then they had Practical Magic 3 years later, and that one didn't. It's like they were drawing a line between teen girls and everyone else. Like, if you're a teen girl, you know, you can't do that and still be considered appropriate for more audiences.
How interesting. I hadn't even thought about that. Although I will say, certainly there was a huge, huge backlash to Harry Potter amongst people being like, oh, like, these kids are going to start worshiping the devil.
Oh, my goodness.
Or whatever it was that people believed, you know. That was a thing that happened. And I mean, like, in fairness, you could argue that maybe, like, if a man had written that, it might not have occurred. Maybe people were on it because, you know, J.K. Rowling could be a witch. I don't know. I mean, it's possible.
I remember one of my old English professors told us a story when she was looking for churches, because they, you know, had been agnostic, but they decided to just go to one or two and see what it was like. And so it was her husband and their son. And she sits down and she's handed the pamphlet and she sits down and she's looking at the calendar of events, you know, potluck on Tuesday, Bible study on Wednesday, Thursday, Harry Potter book burning.
Wow.
Yeah. So they just got up and walked out the door.
Yeah, that's that's weird. I mean, like, yeah, I'll say this. Maybe I just missed it because it wasn't really my world, not particularly my my religious background. But yeah, I don't remember The Craft. I remember being like, let's burn those DVDs. Got them.
VHS copies.
Get it. Yeah. Like, that's beta. Like, they pulled out that Betamax tape and they were like, light it up. Yes, I always forget that they were, you know, I was like, not since the 70s ended and people were going to Chicago stadiums to melt down their disco records because disco was bad or whatever, had there been such a wild, you know, destruction of media. I was like, it was very strange when it happened, and I had not known, I didn't remember, or maybe never knew in the first place that, the reason The Craft had a hard R was because the MPAA was like, girls and magic, bad.
Yep, pretty much. And now we've got Chilling Adventures of Sabrina that's coming out. And one of the main reasons it got moved to Netflix was so they could have those more horror-themed satanic elements because, you know, even on cable, that, you know, that's kind of a no-no. And what's interesting about that show, you know, I won't give anything away. I will not spoil anything. This is just thematic because it, you know, it may or may not have come out by the time this podcast comes out. But it's the theme of it is about it takes place in this, you know, world of witchcraft. But this world of witchcraft has been taken over by the patriarchy. And so you have women who have become subservient within the realm that they have had the most power in. So, you know, the power has kind of been stripped away, and it's about the fight to get that back, which, you know, considering what we've been talking about, how the appeal of witchcraft for younger women has traditionally been about the power that's been denied, having a show where the patriarchy has taken over the one saving grace that young women have is, it's very interesting.
Yeah, that actually, I mean, like, I have not seen it yet, and I can't tell if that makes me want to watch it more or less. This is, like, one of those complex things, right, where it's like, I like The Craft because I watch it, and ultimately, like, the men have a little bit of power, and then they lose it pretty quickly. And that's kind of nice? I don't know, like, I already live on Earth, this one, where things are always, always terrible all the time, it feels like. And I don't know, when I watch stuff like that, to a degree, I want that kind of power fantasy, because you don't really get it much. It's just not a thing that you get in a lot of modern media, where it's like women draw power from each other, there's a cool supernatural element which looks neat, and they're the ones in charge, and the men, even if they try, are not really able to sort of retain any kind of meaningful or, you know, or harmful kind of control. I would much rather be watching that, I think, as a gut reaction. I mean, I'll definitely check out the new Netflix series because it's got Michelle Gomez and I'm really there for her no matter what. I like The Craft because it's not very, it's not that realistic. I'm living realism. I'm living the real world. Do I really, how much more real do I need? I like a little bit of a triumph because I feel like we get so few of them in real life. So yeah, I think ultimately that was weirdly upon rewatching The Craft, I was messaging back and forth with the associate editor of Fangirls, Courtney Enlow, and yeah, we were just having like a real celebration about how yeah, like those girls really like at least Robin Tunney in the end she still got that power, and you know, Neve Campbell, she don't have those scars no more, so that's good. And that Marsha Brady lady, you know who's not going to be an out-and-out racist anymore? Her. So
apparently losing your hair makes you lose your racism? I don't think that's a long-term strategy.
I mean, listen, here's what I'll say. I've seen films pull way worse logic. I mean, there's literally there's a 1970s Westworld porn parody wherein the cure for racism is just having that white guy have sex with a black lady. And then he'll be like, these black folks are okay. That also doesn't work. But I don't know. In the sense of the film, because it ends there. The last time I saw not Marsha Brady, she definitely was too scared to be racist. And you know what? You can't, like, not easy to cure racism, but if you can make somebody so scared that they won't say it out loud, you know what? I'll take it. I'll call it a win. Sounds good to me.
Fair point. She's like, every time I say something racist, a lock of my hair is going to fall out. Oh my God, I've said so many racist things. I got to stop right now.
Yeah, it sounds, yeah, I'm like, wow, if that's it, if right now I could cast a spell that was like, you know what? You're going to get uglier every time you say a racist thing. If you even think something racist, your hair is going to fall out. You're going to go a little more gray. You're going to gain a pound you can't lose. Whatever it is that makes somebody feel less comfortable in their own skin, that sounds good. That's a magic spell I'd cast and feel absolutely no guilt whatsoever about it. I'd be like, let's, you know, learn a lesson.
Question, what magical spell, if you conjured the powers of Manal, and you could cast any spell for your own life. No consequences. Manal has blessed you. He came to you. He blessed you. What would you do?
Oh, well, that has a tragic answer, but that would be a, I would swap gender immediately. That would be my solution.
Why is that tragic? I mean,
Because it's a thing that this is maybe not the podcast for it, but the short answer is that like that is a thing that I did do in my 20s, and then I had money problems and health problems, and now that I'm older, the last time I tried it, I've developed all of these weird conditions, and like I have like allergic reactions to all of the kinds of medical transition that one could do, and watching it now, if I could have any old wish granted consequence free, that is definitely the one. And that is also why Bonnie as a character was always relatable to me when I was younger, because I would go to sleep at night and pray and pray and pray that I would wake up the next day and not be in the body that I was in. And watching her now, yeah, like that moment wherein the scars fall away, like, yeah, dude, that's a pretty powerful feeling, I think, for almost anybody. But yeah, like, that's it. You know, like, if I could be blessed, that would be, you know, I would be like, later. Because it's weird. Like, this is like therapy hour, but like, it has a huge impact on you that like, you know, I walk around and like, I have a conversation with people and they'll be like, that's a man. So like, the way that I speak and the way that I interact with people, people will automatically, it carries with it a color to the words that I say and certain assumptions. And like, it's harder for me to be in a women's space where women are going to trust me because why would they? You know what I mean? Like, I don't look like somebody particularly trustworthy just based on being male presenting and B, yeah, it's just like, it's just, yeah, it just creates a really complex scenario for me and for everybody else. And so I just, you know, I usually stay pretty quiet about it. So there you go. Yeah. That's what I would do. And that is a big part of why I, you know, watching a movie like The Craft can have such a profound impact on me. But here, this is an opportunity for you to be less depressing. What would you do?
Well, I mean, I will say that that's not depressing, especially identifying with Bonnie. I've actually heard a lot of LGBTQ people identifying with Bonnie, you know, shedding her skin and, you know, coming into her own. And, you know, I've recently been, you know, exploring my own identity as a bisexual woman, which is actually the first time I'm talking about this in a public space. So, hello, everyone. How are you doing? So I identify with Bonnie in that regard as well. But if I could have, you know, any wish for myself, I know this is going to be super small potatoes and this is going to be just a one instant thing, but I would do pain-free childbirth.
Oh, slick. That's a really smart idea. See, like, here I was, like, going in this really, like, big abstract way, but
no,
like,
I think that that's, yes, really profound.
A super practical thing. That's some practical magic I can get behind. Da 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 da. Yeah. Yeah, totally. That's really smart. Boy, if I could, if that was an option on the table, because, like, how many people? Yeah, like, you know what? I would say, don't even stop there. I would say, like, just make the whole process of pregnancy, like, more comfortable, like, not a thing where it constantly feels like you can't trust your own body and you feel uncomfortable all the time. Like, if you could just erase, like, imagine if pregnancy was the way that people lied
like, about how pregnancy is and how you're like, apparently there's all these horrible things about your body after you have the baby that they don't talk about unless you ask them. Unless you ask someone who's had a baby, they will get into it. And then you are terrified because you're like, why didn't you say anything earlier? Because
yeah, I think that, yeah,
my body's going to get destroyed, apparently.
Yeah, it sounds really great. Yeah, if the wish is just like no negative effects from pregnancy.
Yeah,
that's a pretty dope wish. I have to tell you, that is really fits with the theme of the whole thing. Like, yeah, that's a good one. I can't take that away from you. That is not even selfish. You know what? Give that to everybody once again.
Yeah.
You know what? Let's hear. That's our solution. The wish that you could have would be that for all women, or I should say all people who can get pregnant, that wish to get pregnant, would be able to do so in comfort and without any kind of negative effects after the fact. And for me, yeah, it would be like anybody that feels uncomfortable in the gender of which they present or the gender in which they were assigned, that they would be able to flip real easy peasy without the complexities of medical and surgical transition. You're welcome, universe. We made the world so much better.
Oh, I just feel like in a real like utopian hopeful state now, because these are both very beautiful goals and I'm just sharing so much and I feel some camaraderie. This is very beautiful.
Yeah, I agree. It is a real nice, everybody likes feeling good about the world. Good, like, these are good wishes. They hurt nobody. Just real upbeat stuff. Thanks for joining me on this very positive adventure in relitigating The Craft. A far from perfect film, but I think we can agree. Ultimately, gives us really good feelings.
Yeah. There's nothing wrong with a little bit of magic.
Yeah, indeed. All right. Let's say somebody watched The Craft. And they were like, love it. Into that craft. What else should they watch?
Oh my goodness. Well, I am going to give a recommendation for a film that is not The Craft in any way, but if you are a fan of teen magic, if you are a fan of that sort of fun storyline, and you want something that you are just going to love to death unconditionally, it has to be Teen Witch.
Oh, I mean, now, point of order, very important for people to know, that did within the last year get a re-release on Blu-ray, got a full restoration. So I wholeheartedly approve of that choice. go out and buy that movie. That movie is a real campy, and it's got the best rap of all time.
Yep.
It's got the top that rap. My friend Sarah Rushikoff, I always joke that she looks just like the top that girl. And someday I'm going to make her do the top rap, the top that rap for me.
Oh, I have the whole thing memorized in my head. We could do it right now, but I'm not going to.
Yeah, I would save it for another time. But yeah, I mean, like, next time I see you, feel free. You can put the hat on and everything.
Oh my God, I'm holding you to this.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm totally into that. But I love Teen Witch. What a good call. See, I was going to go for something weird and dark, but that I consider to be, it has low-key, to me, the most upbeat ending of any horror movie ever made, and that movie is The Witch.
Ah, I have not seen that one.
Well, it's a really dark, dark movie wherein a super religious family moves away from their town because their puritanical town just isn't puritanical enough. And they go to this place, and there's some woods. And inside of the woods is a witch, and stuff goes really haywire. And there's like an evil goat called Black Phillip. And I don't want to ruin the ending since you don't know what it is. But like, I think you're supposed to get to the end and be like, "Wow, that's dark." But I got to the end and I was like, "This is great. I'm so happy," because I'm weird. But I highly recommend it. And then you know, if you watch it, you can tell me what you think about that ending. But that's my weird recommendation. If you're going to watch something that's witchcraft related, just watch The Witch. Why not?
Who named that goat?
Who named the goat Black Phillip?
Yeah.
That's a good question. I don't remember.
Did he name himself?
Maybe. But he's like a black, he's black, and he's a goat. And his name's Phillip. But yeah, I don't know. Maybe his name was just, maybe they just called him Phillip. You know who it was? It was, do you know Brother Nature? You know who that guy is?
Nah.
You ever hear? Brother Nature is a social media ultra star. Look him up. His whole shtick is that he goes out to his, he like lives in, I think he's like in a small town, like upstate New York or something. And he's got all these deer and he names all of them, and he's been doing it for years. Aww. And now like his whole thing is that he goes around and he like names different animals, and he goes and like hangs out with quote the squad. But yeah, he's got the doe squad, and he's like, y'all already know what's up right now. Like, I'm just hanging out here with my doe squad, and look who just pulled up, Canetta the Savage. And it's just really, anyway, like I'm ruining it. It's so
this
funny.
This is amazing.
It's really a delight. Brother Nature is definitely one of my favorite things to come out of the internet in the last 2 or 3 years. He just, he's a delight. And I believe that it was him. Like, he rolled into that puritanical environment and he was like, I got my boy Phillip. And he worships the devil, but that's cool. And then he like threw Phillip some grapes or something and was like, everybody eats. Because that's his thing.
So
he feeds people.
He's allowed to time travel just once, and he chooses to go back to puritanical times to name a goat and then peace out.
And feed the goat. He wants to make sure, like, because that's his thing. He's a very benevolent person, I'll say. Like, not only does he name all of the animals of the world, but his whole thing is he tries to make sure that people are able to eat. So yeah, I'll tell you, maybe you would prevent a lot of bad things from happening in that witch movie. It would be a less good movie. But I'd be tickled. Anyway, as we wrap up, as podcasts must inevitably do, Beth, where can people find you on the internet? Not at home, because that'd be creepy, but on the internet.
Oh, yeah. I'm not telling you guys where I live. I live in a secret bunker above the ground.
There you go.
that's not how we define bunkers nowadays. So, yeah, you can find me on Twitter at Beth Elderkin. That's Elderkin. And, yes, that is a real name. I am not an otherkin, although I get that question way more often than I should. And if you have any tips, any ideas, you can send them to me, beth.elderkin@gizmodo.com. And if you want to find out more about my Charmed recap podcast, we're looking into the reboot of Charmed. That Twitter is at charmingpod. And we're sharing, fun memes and things from the series, which I've been excited to get into because I just binged all of original Charmed. So now I get to go through the journey all over again.
Nice. Yeah. So, yeah, when you're done with this podcast, you should immediately go to Charming Pod so that you can start that podcast. That's called Synergy. My name is Danny Roth. You can find my work at sci-fi.com. That's where you find three of the four podcasts that I do and the videos that I script and occasionally am in front of a camera for, features where I give very fast and loose opinions, willy-nilly, if you will. If you want to find me on social media for more willy-nilly opinions, I'm on Twitter and Instagram at Danny Ordinary. That is Danny with one N, Ordinary, also with one M. Thank you for listening to this podcast, and remember, sometimes the best cure for the horrors of every day is a little everyday horror. We'll see you next time.